Hello, and welcome to State of Crime. One state, two murders, lots of crime, with Kaylin and Elena.
Hi there.
Hi, how are you, honey bunny?
It's been a long week.
Yeah?
It has.
Christmas is coming, the goose is getting fat.
Yeah, it's been a long one. I'm so glad it's over for now.
I know. I went to Boise yesterday. And as everyone knows who goes to Boise this time of year, traffic just is insane. But as I was telling you, as we were saying that, like, people were lovely. Like, this guy just randomly complimented me on my shoes. And this other lady, like, just, you know, stopped and made conversation. And just people were sweet. And that made it way nicer. Right. So, yeah, I have to say I enjoyed that. So
I, this week, have been listening to one of Dr. Phil's podcasts.
Oh, yes. This is awesome. I know where you're going with this.
So, if any of you are on our discussion group, you've already seen this.
Oh, this made me laugh.
But Dr. Phil has, like, a true crime podcast now. And I was listening to it.
And by the way, we don't appreciate the competition, Dr. Phil.
Right. Not like there's any competing with him.
That's right.
It's Dr. Phil, so. But I was listening to it, and he had done a few episodes on Chris Watts, which because we had talked about how we don't really listen to other true crime podcasts lately because...
Yeah. And it's not like I still love mine. It's just, it's time. Right. It's totally a time issue for me.
Right. That and us not wanting to, like, redo
cases. Yeah.
And so this was one that I'm like, I know I'm never going to cover Chris Watts because literally everybody in the world knows who he is and what he did. It's just something that...
Right.
With it being as recent as it was and it had so much media behind it, it's not... There's no sense in us covering it. So I was listening to it. And Dr. Phil had made a comment about how the prison that he's in housed many serial killers and blah, blah, blah. And he's like serial killer Ed Gein. And I immediately paused it. And that's when I texted you as soon as he said it. Because
I know it's awesome because he's not a serial killer.
No, he was a grave robber.
Right, he was, and definitely like some necrophilia kind of stuff in there. And he did commit murders, but he just doesn't have that. Well, he just doesn't meet those criteria at all, you know. And even with two, and I know Cheryl, you know, said you got to have 3+.
Uh-huh.
But even so, I just don't feel like he had that same motivation.
Right.
Or, yeah, so. But, yeah, I was cracking up when you said that. And, by the way, last week you recommended those, what was it, The Confession Killer on Netflix?
Yes.
And I actually started watching it.
Did you? I haven't gotten around to it yet.
Thanks. And I think I'm on, like, the third episode.
Is it good?
It is pretty good. It's infuriating. And, like, a lot of this I already knew about this case and about this dude. But obviously, they're going way deeper. You're getting a whole lot more of the story, being able to piece it together. But I do recommend it. It's fascinating. It's infuriating. Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff in there. So
I almost started watching it last night, but since I was crocheting, I decided I needed to not because I wouldn't pay full
attention,
right? And I was FaceTiming, so it was just...
Oh my gosh.
There was just a lot happening.
You multitasker, you.
But there was another thing that I meant to bring up, and now I'm going to forget what it is.
I'm sorry. I blocked you off.
No, that's okay.
Well, while you're looking for it, don't let me distract you. I just wanted to inform our readers.
You do that all the time.
I'm always hoping that people will read. But anyway, I wanted to let our listeners know that we are going to take a bye week for Christmas because we just feel like maybe Christmas and murder don't necessarily mix. And we just, we want to spend time with our families and have a little relaxation there. And we are doing this week a little bit differently.
Right.
This episode is normally mine. And Cheryl, again, did send me a really great case. And I just don't feel like I've really been able to do it justice. So we are going to start with Kaylin's case today. She has a whole lot to talk about. If it ends up being a double parter, we'll just let that be our Hawaii week. And when we loop back to Hawaii, I'll do the case that I have prepared. I just, like I said, I went to Boise yesterday, got a lot of stuff done Christmas-wise, and I was going to get up this morning and work on my my case a little bit more. And I have this thing called trigeminal neuralgia, which is also known as the suicide disease, and that is no joke. It is incredibly painful. And when I wake up and I have an attack, man, it just knocks me down. So
yeah,
I've been trying to deal with that this morning. I'm still kind of iffy, so if I'm a little off, I apologize.
Luckily, I have a lot of information on this case. And I didn't expect to, and this is actually one of the first cases that I've covered that came from my original list that I had written down.
Yeah.
Because most of them, I've written them down, and then we get to that state, and I'm like, oh, I found something else I want to do.
And, well, and I found out, too, and I kind of thought, probably already had this in the back of my mind from previous, you know, reading or whatever, but Hawaii really does have a fairly low crime rate overall. Right. They're the lowest in the country for gun crime. Mm-hmm. And so there's not, like, when you look it up, and I think even you were like, did you look on Murderpedia? There's nothing there. And there really aren't.
On Murderpedia, there are 4 men and 2 women.
Yeah, there's not a lot of crime, which is lovely, you know. And a lot of the others are, you know, your typical, and I hate to say typical because that sounds dismissive, but domestic violence or anger, you know, those sorts of things. There's not these kind of, not a plethora of these out there crazy cases mm-hmm. like we're sometimes used to, and the ones that you and I think kind of gravitate towards. Right. So, but you found a great one.
I did.
Mine is actually very interesting as well. Like I said, I just feel like I haven't done due diligence. So I'm going to turn the time over to you, girl.
So we're gonna go here. This is a case that you are probably going to hate.
You say that like every week now.
It's a cold case. Yeah. And I know how much you hate cold cases.
I think I know what you're doing.
So, do you?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Oh, gosh. Do you know a lot about it?
Is it the Honolulu Strangler?
No.
Oh.
Ooh. Okay. So no.
Never mind.
So, we're going to talk about Lisa Au. She was a 19-year-old hairdresser. Mind you, when I go through this case, I don't know if this was the best idea I could have done, but in my mind, it was the best way to go.
Okay.
I didn't write down towns. I didn't do any of that because there's no way I can pronounce any of them.
Yeah, that was, I know, that again, you have, you know, native Hawaiian names, which are beautiful and gorgeous, but I struggle with.
Right.
You have, like with my case, a lot of the people had Japanese ancestry, mm-hmm. which again is a huge influence in the Hawaiian Islands.
Right. And I didn't want to butcher them.
Yeah. And we already proved that you and I are not very good with the Japanese names on our Japanese case. So,
I mean, I can barely speak English. So
you are a little hard and judgmental of yourself.
So she was a 19-year-old hairdresser, and on January 20th, 1982, she left the salon that she worked at. I believe it was around 9:15, 9:30-ish, and she was headed to her boyfriend's sister's house. And her boyfriend was going to meet her there, and they were going to have dinner with her sister and I believe her sister's boyfriend as well. Her boyfriend's name is Doug Holmes. He met at his sister's house. He met Lisa there for dinner, so they had driven separately.
Okay.
And they stayed until about 12:45 a.m., so just after midnight, when they decided to go home. And since they drove separately, they would have had to drive home separately. Now, they didn't live together.
Okay.
Lisa lived with her family, and Doug lived in the dorm rooms at the University of Hawaii.
Okay.
And so they said goodbye, and that was the last time he saw her. That would also be the last time that anyone would see her.
This is sad.
So the next morning, Lisa's family wakes up and realizes that she never made it home. So their first instinct is to call Doug.
Right.
See if she's over there, just make sure everything's okay. Well, they call the dorm room, and he's there, but Lisa's not. And he tells them what happened last night. We went to my sister's. We left it about this time, and that's the last time I've seen or heard from her.
Now, was she, I'm sorry, did you say she was walking home, driving home?
They were each driving separately.
That's, okay, I would assume, yeah.
Yeah. So, he tells her parents, I'm going to go around and drive around and look for her. Now, another thing that we'll note is that Lisa got her driver's license 2 days prior.
Oh my gosh. So now, does Hawaii have an older age for driving? Do you not? That, I don't know why that.
I'm not sure.
Keep reading. Let's okay. go. I'll look it up.
So she had gotten her driver's license 2 days prior. And the night that she disappeared, it was extremely rainy. Okay. Which is, I feel like, fairly normal for
right,
Hawaii.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And she, so Doug is driving around and he's looking for her and her family's starting to panic.
By the way, 15 years and 6 months is the driving age. So I was wrong on that. I don't know why I thought that, but go ahead.
Okay. So her family's starting to panic. Doug's driving around trying to look for her. And he, so they initially thought, since it was a very rainy evening, and I believe the next morning was also a very rainy day, they initially thought that she was in a car accident. She was a fairly unexperienced driver. It was a shitty night to be driving in.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what they assumed at first. And a few hours after Doug had started driving around looking for her, he finds her car on the side of a highway.
Oh, no. And that is never good.
As soon as he finds her car and she's not in it, he calls the police. Now, the...
And remember, folks, this is 1982, so no cell phone.
Right.
If you, you know, had to pull over on the side of the road because of car problems or whatever the case may end up being here, you were stuck.
Right.
So, unless you could find a payphone, and those were few and far between also, so...
Right. So the responding police officer gets there, mm-hmm. and he is taking a look around. And one of the first things he notices is her windows. Now, this was stated a couple of different ways. One of the resources that I found said that all of her windows were cracked a couple of inches.
Okay.
Another source that I found said that her driver window was down about halfway.
Okay.
And... inside the car, it was drenched.
So it had been sitting there for a long time with these windows down and with all the rain blowing in.
Right.
So.
And the officer also said that it was really weird that there was so much water in her car. He said there was probably about 2 to 3 inches on the floorboard of
water.
Oh,
wow. So they're thinking even more than would have been normal for it sitting in the rain that long?
No, what gets weird is that her purse is also in the car.
Okay.
On one of the seats. It didn't specify which seat, but it was on one of the seats.
Probably the driver's, but whatever, yeah.
Bone dry.
Although, depending on where it was sitting in the car on the seats, that's a possibility. I mean, I've left my windows down in my car before and had it rain, not to this extent.
Right.
Obviously. But if you know how it is. I mean, the rain only blows in so far. It's not like it's a shower head and it's shooting clear across. Do you know? I mean, the middle of your seats are usually dry.
Right.
So.
Now, the way he described it is like, the whole seat was dry except, or the whole seat was wet except for the purse on top of it.
Okay, so that's the weirdness.
Right. So he clearly assumes that somebody has put this
so
there
they,
afterwards.
Right. So the purse has not been there as long as the car has been sitting there with the windows down and the rain blowing
correct.
In.
Correct. And...
I should be a detective.
The only thing missing from her vehicle was her driver's license, which was a temporary... and her registration for the vehicle.
Okay.
Everything else was accounted for. Nothing else seemed to be missing. But there was no evidence to where Lisa had gone. And they end up doing a huge search for her. It was the police. I believe they said that they had Marines in. The citizens. Everybody was out looking for her. And they were searching the area near where her car was because that's your first thought
right.
to do. Because
she probably wouldn't have gone too far on foot in the rain, hopefully, right?
Right. So we had a ton of people out looking for her, but her parents did stay basically at home the whole time.
In case she called or showed
correct.
Up.
Correct. Her mom said in an interview, "We have stayed near home in case she happens to be able to call near the phone." And her dad said, "I went with her to purchase the car, a car that checked out all right." So her dad's kind of on the fence about it being anything to have to do with the car.
Right. So it's saying it's not car trouble. She stopped for some other reason.
Right. And the police were saying that if she had been kidnapped, then they probably would have gotten a call to the family asking for ransom, but they never called. And this is where things start to kind of take a little bit of a turn, because there are witnesses that reported seeing a car with blue flashing lights on its grill behind Lisa's car.
All right. So we're thinking maybe somebody was impersonating a police officer.
Or it was an off-duty police officer. All right. So those are their two main theories at this point. But the police department they took these allegations very, very seriously. Right. And they ended up changing the policy regarding the stopping of vehicles by off-duty police officers. They were no longer allowed to do it at all. They had to have a uniformed officer with them at the stop if it was going to happen.
You know what? I'm a fan of that.
Right. They also banned the use of the blue light grills.
Okay.
So they did. They took these very seriously, and they changed what they needed to change. And unfortunately, 10 days after her car was found, on January 31st, 1982, a jogger and his dog had found her remains.
Aww.
And she was said to be, like, in the brush, but it also kind of, they described it almost as a ravine that she had been found in. She was naked, and her body had already started to decompose.
Right, because it's Hawaii, and it's wet, and it's, you know, humid, green, and right. Yes.
So, in 2016, a former Honolulu police homicide lieutenant,
a lot of syllables.
It was. His name was Gary Diaz. He said that her body was so decomposed to the point where it was not possible to identify the cause of death. To this day, we don't know how she died.
Oh, man.
So,
see, and like, you know, as soon as you say you find the remains, my instinct is, of course I know that's where this is going, but it's still sad.
Right.
But at least they found her body.
Right.
You know, and you are happy for her family that they're not left there with eternal questions, although this is not an answer you would want. But also not knowing the cause has got to be so difficult when you're trying to solve a case. Which is probably part of the reason this is a cold case.
Right. Now, even without a cause of death, they still classified her death as a homicide. And to this day, in 2019, there have been no arrests and nobody has been charged with her murder.
Okay.
People were questioned, but nothing really panned out, and the police just didn't have enough evidence. And there was an investigating grand jury put together, but that disbanded in 1984, so just a couple of years after she was found.
All right.
And since then, nothing official has been heard about her case.
So they just have nothing, is what you're telling me. Like, this has been a very frustrating case.
I think that's what they want us to believe, is that they have nothing.
But you think they're keeping it quiet and secret.
We get more information in a little
all
bit.
All right.
Now, Lisa's dad, Chester, he had said in 94 when this article came out that he had said this in. He said, quote, "I feel disappointed in the system, but I learned to deal with the fact that nothing is ever going to be done."
Okay.
And
I can see that. Like, after a while, you just have to be like, damn it.
Right.
You know, yeah.
So her parents do end up divorcing in the early 90s.
Damn it.
The stress of everything just wasn't working. And so her disappearing and her being murdered was said to be a huge factor in them divorcing. Her mother, Patrice, ended up passing away in 1992 due to cancer. And then I don't know when her father died, but he has since passed away, and he is buried next to Lisa.
But her mother isn't?
No, she is buried in a different cemetery.
Okay. Briefly, does she have siblings?
She does.
Okay.
Will get there.
All right. So it's nice, you know, but that always bothers me when family members pass away without getting answers. Although I have to say, I do believe in an afterlife, so they know.
Right. So the former homicide detective, his name was Bert Corneal, And he has since come forward about a lot of things. And he isn't exactly happy with the way the investigation was going. He said that one of the things that he noticed along with the dry purse in the drenched car, the amount of water on the floorboard, another thing that was noticed by the responding officer is there were scratches on Doug Holmes' face.
The boyfriend. Damn boyfriend. You know, I was seriously, I'm like, the boyfriend did it. But I always say that when we do these cases. Right. And then I'm always wrong, so.
Well, in your defense, I believe, I actually saw this statistic like 2 days ago. I believe it was 95% of murders are caused by spouses.
Or significant others.
Right.
Yeah, well, I told you. I mean, I've been on this rant for a long time about, you
know. But 95%.
The number one, like, if a woman's going to be murdered, the most likely cause is her significant other.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, it's insanity. Yes. Well, now, so he did say that there were scratches on Doug Holmes' face. But the main suspect was a Honolulu police officer. Because the only
evidence... Because of that flashing light.
Right. And the fact that her license and her registration were missing.
Oh, yeah.
And her window was down. So they're assuming that she pulled over for who she thought was a cop. Right. Rolls the window down, hands him her license and registration. So now they're on this rant of, it's a cop. It has to be. And
you and I have seen things lately. And I think we had a posting in our... Facebook group, cops have been doing a lot of shitty things lately.
Right. And they didn't have enough evidence to indict this police officer, but there was a lot of questioning. They spent about 3 years on him. And the Detective Burt Corneal, Detective Burt Corneal said that due to the pressure that police were put under to make an arrest, meant they did sloppy police work, which we see time and time and time again. Mm-hmm. It's just sloppy police work so they can close a case.
Yep.
And that's exactly what he is saying that they did here. And eventually, as this is always going to happen with suspects, their names are going to be leaked eventually.
Mm-hmm.
And this police officer's name was eventually leaked. And when this happened, there was another woman who ended up coming forward claiming that the same officer had pulled her over using an unmarked car with blue grill lights.
Okay.
Now, they didn't really go into that anymore. And this same police officer lived near Lisa. And he also had a sexual harassment complaint filed against him prior.
So whether or not he did this one specific act,
there's some issues.
He's a bad guy and he should not freaking be a cop.
Right.
And I just have, this is another one of my rants too that I get on a lot, is that we need much more professionalizing of our law enforcement in this country.
I agree.
Needs to be streamlined. It needs to be much, much more difficult to become a police officer. They need to be paid better. I know in like big cities, but I know like here in our town, police don't make crap for the most part.
Right, right, right.
You know, you need to, you know, I'm always on the rant about paying teachers. Well, you need to pay people like, I mean, when you put this much responsibility in somebody's hands, you need to make sure that these are well-educated people, that they have the correct temperament for this sort of thing. That these are people who are very, very much about de-escalation and working with people and being level-headed and calm. Not the dude that got bullied in high school and so now he wants to wear a big gun. And that's what I see far too often.
Right. So, former Lieutenant Corneal also said that the prosecution failed to be able to indict. And because of this failure, it showed almost all of the flaws that they had made and the mistakes that they had made during this investigation. And he said because of that, it discouraged any other prosecutors from trying to solve this case, which was one of the big factors in why it went cold in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at this point, Lieutenant Corneille was so frustrated with how everything was being dealt with.
Yes.
That he ends up quitting the HPD. And he ends up starting his own private investigation company. And his first clients are Lisa's parents.
Oh.
Yes.
Keep going.
So he left. He left the HPD because he's like, the way that they are doing this, the way that this is going, is not working. They're doing things wrong. They're not looking at people they should. And it's just not going anywhere. So he quit the police department and he went and he started his own private investigation company. And his first clients were Lisa's parents because he wanted to try to get this solved. Now, he interviewed witnesses, some that had been already interviewed and some that had not. He had also interviewed a lot of different persons of interest that he believes that the police either didn't think about looking at or they just simply ignored them completely. That, like, their name could have come up and they were just like, no, we've got the police officer. You know what I mean?
Right. And you and I have talked a number of times about that as well. This idea of getting fixated on a single suspect, mm-hmm. and how often that just becomes a problem, you know?
Right. And so they were so set on this police officer just because mainly because her driver's license and her registration were missing.
Right.
And the window was down.
But again, it could be somebody impersonating as well. I mean, that's happened more than once.
Correct. But when Bert Corneille starts doing his investigation separately from the police department, he discovers that after work, before she went to Doug's house, Lisa had stopped at a grocery store to pick up something for dinner to take with her to his sister's house.
Okay.
And she had to show her license as her form of ID to write her check.
Okay.
And she left her ID at the grocery store.
Oh, so that's where that went.
Right. And so he starts kind of trying to debunk the idea that it was a police officer.
Mm-hmm.
And another man that he ends up looking at is a security officer at the apartment complex where Lisa had last been seen.
Mm-hmm.
And he was never interviewed until Corneille went and sought him out and brought him in.
See, that's the kind of stuff that you just sit there scratching your head.
Shoddy police work.
Yeah, where it's like, why wouldn't you talk to this guy that's like, hey, I have the thing.
Right.
Wow.
So he seeks him out. He does his investigation with him. And then I believe the police had come in to interview him.
Of course.
Of course they did. Because
he made them look bad.
Exactly. And that's the wrong paper. So the security officer said that he had seen Doug and Lisa arguing outside of the apartment complex earlier that evening. He said it was around 11 p.m. and that Lisa had left before he did, that they did not leave at the same time.
Okay.
And there was another witness that was also not tracked down until Corneille started doing his own investigation. And this was a newspaper delivery driver.
Okay.
Now, she is a huge key witness here.
So she's not a suspect. She's a witness.
She is a witness.
Okay.
Now, she said that on her normal route home, or her normal route around to deliver these papers, it was around 2:30 a.m. when a man had passed by her in a blue vehicle with a woman in the passenger seat. Now, this route that she was on was also in the same area where Lisa's body was found.
Okay, and about what time? Do we know what time this was?
It was around 2:30.
Okay, in the morning.
Right.
So, very late, so there probably wasn't a lot of traffic.
Right. So, he said that she had said that the blue vehicle had passed her, and there was a female passenger in the car. But what caught her attention was that she said that the female appeared to be sleeping because as he turned the corner, he saw the delivery driver had seen the woman's head like fall.
Oh.
And so she originally said that she believed that the female was sleeping And then when, well, we'll get to what happens in a little bit after that. So she later on her same route sees this man again further down the road, and he had turned into a paved turnaround to try to go back the opposite direction. And the delivery driver said when he saw her, he just stared at her.
Okay.
And what she noticed was there was no longer a female passenger in the car.
So he may have noticed her the first time and is now like, are you following me? Did you see anything?
Right.
Okay.
So the day after, I believe it was, that Lisa's body was found, this delivery driver went to the police station to report this,
mm-hmm.
as she very well should have. So, like, good for her. And she went and she reported everything that she saw. She said, that they took down her information, but they never followed up with her.
Why?
You want to know what else gets fucked up here?
Yeah.
She followed up with them.
And they were still like... She called
multiple times, and they were still just like, meh.
This kind of stuff just makes me insane.
Right. Like... What the fuck? Somebody just gave you, like, a huge lead, and you're just like, meh.
That's...
Meh.
That is infuriating beyond... And that's what I'm talking about. Right. You know, get these people trained. Oh, just keep going. people don't want to hear me ramble again.
So, there was also... This there's just so much shitty police work happening here.
Yeah.
Another thing that happened was there was an officer. His name is Officer, I wrote it down, Officer Michael Rehfeldt.
Okay.
Now, excuse me. This officer was on duty the night that Lisa went missing. Now, it didn't say who asked him to do this, but I assume it was either a prosecutor or one of his superiors or something of that sort that asked him to lie to the investigating grand jury, saying that he had seen a patrol car behind Lisa's vehicle that had stopped her.
Why?
Because they had their guy in their heads and they wanted to get him.
No.
They wanted to make an arrest and they couldn't do it without somebody lying. And so he was asked to lie to say that he had seen her car with a patrol car behind it in a stop, but Officer Rehfeldt, said that he refused to lie about something that he didn't see, and he never testified. So, like, good for you, man. Way to be an upstanding police officer.
Yeah, no kidding.
Because, think about
it. So, here's the thing. Okay, so, I'm sorry, I'm going to
rant. No, go ahead. Rant.
I know, but this is the thing that pisses me off. In this case... with all the bullshit that's going on in this country politically right now, is that nobody seems to care about the truth anymore or the facts. Like, just don't focus on whether or not your team's winning or going to win. Look at the facts. Sit down with a pen and a piece of notebook paper and just list the facts.
Right.
What actually happened here? What do we know for certain? Then everything else that's a question, you put that on another sheet of paper with a question mark, and you go and you try to find that stuff out. But this whole thing of, this is our guy, so we got to arrest him, so we're going to manipulate everything around it to make that happen.
Right.
Is bullshit.
Right. Right.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. I agree. I 100% agree with you. Now, there was also a sworn statement, and I don't know who put this statement out. I don't know who wrote this statement, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But it said that there was no police officer involved in the disappearance or the murder of Lisa Au. Basically, it said that the police had wasted 3 years focusing on an innocent man with no actual evidence.
Right. And like I said, it sounds like this policeman was horrible.
Right.
And they probably wanted to get rid of him. But it sounds like they had ample reason to get rid of him. You didn't mm-hmm. need to pin a murder on him.
Mm-hmm. Now, you and I, as we've already talked about today, the boyfriend his normally does. It's right, normally right. The significant other. So
are we going to have an explanation for the scratches?
Doug was a suspect
right.
at one point.
Well, with scratches on his face, he should have been, and given the proclivity of significant others.
So we never get a reasoning behind the scratches on his face.
Okay.
But he did take 2 polygraph tests and failed both of them. But, because remember, we don't have the best police work going on here right now.
And you and I have also talked about polygraph tests. If you're already in a state of emotional turmoil, that can skew results.
Correct.
Yada, yada, yada.
So he did have an excuse for him failing both of them. And he said it was because he had felt guilty for not driving her home due to her inexperience in the shitty weather that was going on.
And I can see that, right. too.
And the lead detective on this case, his name was Detective Lum. He said that it was an acceptable reason to fail these polygraph tests, and they had no other motive, so he had no reasoning to kill her, and they had no other reason to look at him.
Okay. But again, just based on a polygraph test makes me suspicious.
Right.
And then especially giving the rest of this police work, I'm not real trustworthy there.
Right. So another thing, so they said that he had no motive. If it was Doug, there was no motive. There was no third party, so there was no jealousy. Neither of them really had any money, so there wasn't, like, insurance money.
There doesn't have to be a motive, as we know. I mean, usually the motive is just, I want to control you. You didn't do something I wanted you to do, so you die.
Right. But
motive.
Doug did say that he planned on ending the relationship.
Okay.
Now, this to me is motive enough. We have seen it in multiple cases, specifically Chris Watts.
Yeah.
Scott Peterson. Look at these men who they really just wanted. I mean, granted, they had mistresses involved.
Right.
And Doug supposedly didn't. But they just, instead of breaking up with somebody, they killed them so that they could have, like, a clean slate. So, that's motive enough
right,
for me.
Right, right. Well, and like I said, you when you look at the number of men who kill their partners
for no reason, just because they wanted an
exactly,
out.
Exactly. They want an out, or they're just tired of them, they lose their temper, whatever. It, mm-hmm. There isn't, usually there's not this
big motive.
Exactly.
Right. So, about a year after Lisa had died, her body was exhumed.
Okay.
They had taken her skull and her jawbone, and they had sent them to Los Angeles to have another coroner try to figure out the cause of death.
That's not a lot to go on.
It's not. But they did say that the HPD's coroner wasn't very experience
was as bad as the rest of the police department.
Probably. So the LA coroner did an exam, but the results to this day have never been released. And there are conflicting statements about where Lisa's skull and jawbone are to this day.
Oh man.
The police say that it is in the possession of the medical examiner's office. But the medical examiner's office said that they were returned to her casket with the rest of her remains.
Okay.
But her family says that they still don't know. They don't know where her bones are. They don't know if they had been put back in with the rest of her remains or if the medical examiner still
And you
has
feel like that the family, I mean, because usually when you reinter, you usually have another small ceremony or something like that. And the
right.
family should have been there for that.
Right. Now, in Corneal had also said that the medical examiner with the HPD didn't do his job.
Big surprise.
He said that the body was never washed. She was still in the HPD bag. And there were leaves, dirt, and rubbish inside the bag.
Oh, my God.
So, like, fuck these police officers and the medical examiner. Like, do your fucking job.
Yeah.
Have a little bit of respect for somebody who just got murdered.
That's insane.
So,
have a little respect for the truth. Again,
Right. So, another thing is that a good part of this is that, like we said, you asked if she had siblings. Mm-hmm. She did have a sister. Her sister was 7 years old when she went missing and when she passed away. And her sister and her aunt are still, because both of her parents are now dead.
Right.
They still go to her gravesite regularly, and they are trying to ask questions. They are trying to keep her name out there. They want to try to find whatever answers they can. And there's an anthropologist, I believe he was in L.A. I believe he works in L.A. or he was in Florida. I'm not sure. There was conflicting
on
where he's at. And he is an anthropologist that worked on cases from 9/11. He worked on cases in the Jeffrey Dahmer case. So he said, and he had said that any unexperienced medical examiner can miss the tiniest thing that can tell you
the
cause of death.
Right.
And he had said publicly, if there's any way I can get my hands on those remains, I will do another exam in a heartbeat.
Okay.
And so he wants to. And he wants to be able to help. And the family, as of 2019, I believe this was April of this year, her family does plan on requesting her body to be exhumed once again and re-examined. And like I said, her sister was only 7 years old when Lisa had gone missing. And she said, quote, any answers now would just be a relief.
Yes, I can see that.
But it is very unlikely that her case will ever be solved. And I say this because...
Well, because everything's been botched so horrifically from the get-go.
Right.
And then just the natural circumstances of not being able to establish how she died.
Correct. And our security guard has passed away.
Okay.
Our newspaper delivery driver has passed away.
God, everyone dies.
I mean, it's been... I mean,
well, that's true. It's 82, so...
So it's been a while. And... the original suspected officer is still alive. Lieutenant Lum, who was the head detective over this case, is still alive, but he refuses to comment on this case at all, which good he should, because he's probably embarrassed
mm-hmm.
that they did as shitty work as they did. Former officer Michael Rehfeldt said he was the officer who was asked to lie to the grand jury, and he has also this year come forward saying that he would be 100% willing to fully cooperate with any future investigation. Former Detective Cornell said that he would return to Hawaii from his current residence in Florida to assist in any way that he can. Doug Holmes, who was Lisa's former boyfriend, is currently living in Australia, working as an executive at an investment firm.
I still feel shady about him for some reason.
So do I.
I really
do. Very much so.
Mm-hmm.
And
I just feel like given that it was 1982, it was an easy one to miss. Do you know what I mean?
No, I have a lot of questions on this dude too. I think it's weird that they didn't dig into him further.
Mm-hmm.
And they probably would have dug into him further if anybody would have taken this... delivery drivers
seriously
right?
And I really want to know more about, you know, did they have any violence in their past, you know, like the whole relationship. I want to know more about.
Right now, he and his family did give a statement saying that, quote, Lisa and her memory deserve justice, and it's good to hear that the HPD has a cold case squad now. And I'm sorry, that was stated in 2018. But even with this cold case squad, with everything that they've got going on, with the shitty police work that has happened, with just every way that they could have gone wrong in this case, they did.
The fact you don't even know where her bones are for sure.
Right!
Yeah, it doesn't sound like this was handled well. And you're right, this is an infuriating case.
It is, and there is almost anybody that you talk to that was involved in this case, including her family, the former detectives, anybody that will talk about this case, also says that it's highly unlikely that it will ever be solved.
Right. Damn.
Right. So when you first start, this one took me a minute, because when you first start digging into it, I was like, there's not going to be a whole lot of information on this case. It's going to be like, oh, this is what happened before she went missing. She went missing. We found her car, and then we found her body, and then they found a police officer, and that's it. But then when you start digging a little more, and you're like, oh, there's a lot more underneath all of these little things. And
well, again, you're seeing a lot of systemic and institutional, what's the word I want? You know, just ineptitude as well. That's a cause of this. So.
Right. And it's nice that former Detective Cornell has also been coming forward to be like, this is, and he still has all of his case files, or all the files for this case and everything. And he was like, they just did a fucked up job.
Yeah.
But like, if you want me to go back to Hawaii and help, I will. I don't know.
All right.
It's sad because it probably, honestly, if you are thinking logically about it, this case will never get solved.
No.
There's no way. They don't have the witnesses.
The only way it's going to happen is if somebody comes forward or, you know what I mean, like guilty conscience, or they find a diary or something like
that. Right,
like
that. So, yeah, this case is never going to.
No.
Well,
thanks for that, Kaylin.
You're welcome.
So, all right.
I enjoyed it more.
My case is also infuriating, but it's more satisfying, I think. So that's all
answers?
I'm going to say. Oh, yeah, definitely. Oh,
okay.
So,
it's
already
more satisfying. Yeah. All right. So if you have any suggestions for us, like we said, we are taking a bye week next week.
Yes.
But the week after that.
Oh, yes. I was going to look up where we were headed next.
Yeah,
because
I meant to look.
I did,
and
right.
I didn't.
Here it is. After there, we will be in Maryland.
Maryland? Why do I feel like we've already done Maryland?
Did we do Maryland?
I don't know.
I don't
Maybe
think
not.
So.
I thought.
I went off the one state you had given me.
Yeah,
so.
And already that one was wrong because I had missed a couple to cross off, remember?
Well, that's true because I caught a couple. So anyway, we're going to Maryland and maybe it's for the second time. We don't know. But
right, we'll see.
Thank you for listening. Message us on Facebook on our discussion group at stateofcrimepodcast@gmail.com. And as always, thanks for listening.
And if you're listening on an Apple product, make sure you go in and rate and review us. Thanks. Bye.